Hare Krishna. Today I would like to talk about the purpose of life, which we all know that it is to love God, to know Krishna, to understand our relationship. But I would like to just talk from the dimension of what stops us from doing that. What are the difficulties? Why do we have problems, especially in relation to relating with other devotees or other people, and what we can do about it? So, it is presumed that when we come to the temple and within a short time we are told that the purpose of life is to understand that we are not this body, we are this soul, and that we should be understanding what the super soul, the Paramatma, wants us to do, what is our purpose in life, which is really to come back to Him, that He wants us to come back. We know that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also has said that, even though Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita that Chaturvarnam Maya Shishtam Guna Karma Vibhakasha, so He has created these four social orders and the ashrams. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says that I am not a brahmachari or a sannyasi, grihastha, vanprastha. I am not a Brahmin, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya. He says that I am just a servant of the servant of the servant. So, what we do understand from that is that when Krishna says He has created these social orders, it is basically a facility to harmonize our relationships and gradually go back to the Lord. It may be difficult for us to visualize now how, looking to the understanding or misunderstanding of the caste system, how it could be actually true. But in fact, Krishna has, at least they were perfectly following it many thousands of years ago. And over time, with Kali Yuga's progress, it has been pervertedly misused. So, in spite of that, we do see from the understanding of this shloka that we are, we may have our own inclinations, we have some likings and some special attributes which Krishna has given us. But as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Krishna Himself has said, that ultimately the real purpose, the real position is that we are just like all, every living entity, every human being is just an insignificant person who's looking to understand the infinite, that is the Lord. So, these are all temporary designations which we, because of our misunderstanding, we actually get caught up in that. But the more we understand our relationship and the more we associate, gradually we come to the understanding of what our real position would be. So, Prabhupada always used to give the example that how cooperation could be based on this understanding, that just like the parts of a body are primarily for functioning, the smooth functioning of the body, the hands, the legs, the head, the eyes, they each have a particular function, but independently or individually, they have no meaning. But collectively, they are there to sustain the body. In the same way, Prabhupada always said that if we cooperate, we come from the various backgrounds, then only we can understand how society could function. And though society does not function because of the various misunderstandings and also the various egos, our own inclinations coming to the fore. But when we are aspiring devotees, that is the platform on which we can understand how we could relate to each other. And actually we see that Srila Prabhupada, the founder of ISKCON, created ISKCON about 40 years ago, primarily for giving us the facility to come together for this very purpose. And we see even in this temple, which is just a small sample of ISKCON, right now, in more than 400 centers around the world, virtually at this moment, thousands of people are, or lakhs of people are gathered to hear about Krishna consciousness. And we don't see, we don't even visualize who's in the room, who's next to us, who are around us, which caste, which sect, which background they come from, what is their different intellectual capacities, the academic qualifications, whether they are a man or woman, whether they are learned or not, whether they are a farmer or a cook or any profession. It actually has been seen by us every day or every time that we come to the temple. Nobody ever comes in and thinks on those terms. So we actually see that this is the reality. It is practically possible to live on that level. And the difficulty is that when we do go out and when we looking for our own material needs, then various designations and groups and so on do come in the picture. You go to college and then you hear about quotas and you hear this. You go to work, you also see the differences. And then also, even if they're not externally so, for instance, in the Western countries, they may say, oh, we don't believe in caste and so on. But they don't believe in the caste the way it is talked of. Okay, there are the OBCs and the scheduled caste, and they may not put it in that form. But there is a subtler caste form of who is a performer materially, who is not performing, who is an achiever, who is not achieving, who is wealthy, who is not wealthy. And then that is why they propagated a whole philosophy, economic philosophy, what they call as capitalism, which means that, okay, it needs freedom. Each one can do what he wants in the pursuit of exploiting material nature and creating wealth. Why? Because then there is no system which can govern them. The individuality has been propagated. Why? Because we want to rebel and we want to see that we don't have any conformist pressure, that there is no authority over us. Because then it becomes very convenient. And if the lawmakers themselves or the people who are in power, if they were to say so, that everywhere, when they talk of this system or that system, but they ultimately talk that no, each one should be at liberty, it doesn't matter if how they live, it's fine. I mean, it is just a reflection of the times that in France, they just had, they have this presidential elections once in 7 years. So for the first time, they had a woman candidate. And she was very popular, though she lost, but she was very popular. And she didn't have any husband. She had 4 children, but no husband. The man she stayed was what they call a partner. He was the general secretary of her party. So he was the second most powerful person. But because of this campaign, in fact, now they've split because they couldn't stay together. But for 25 years, they stayed without getting married. They produced 4 children. And she was very popular. So it is the reflection of today's world that people do not look at these things. It is not considered how we live. But then if we go by a majority, just if everybody is going, the blind following the blind, then we will also follow in that way. But if we were to actually follow a system of as Krishna has laid down, and we attempt to follow that, we have the courage to do so, then we see that we go by how our intelligence dictates through the scriptures, through the acharyas and through the sadhu, and from the current guru. And then we understand how we can proceed. And therefore, the fundamental thing that comes out, one big major difference in the systems is that there is a need for sacrifice, which is not the case. You never hear this word outside in today. So if we were to disregard it, if you just pursue what we feel like, then the element of sacrifice is not there. And here Krishna himself says that in the beginning of creation, I sent forth men and demigods and sacrifice for Vishnu. So the sacrifice is the key element. And in Kali Yuga, the sacrifice of devotional service based on the congregational chanting of the holy names. So why do we chant? Why do we take the holy names? Because it is laid down that in Kali Yuga, this is the only way that we can purify ourselves from the various contaminations. And on that basis, when everybody comes together, just like everyone is here or in other temples in ISKCON, they're here for one purpose only. We participate in our kirtans, we enjoy each other's the relationship based on that. And that is a very unifying factor. This is what Prabhupada said as unit. It is unity among diversity. The diversity means there is such a diverse, different external backgrounds. People are coming from different backgrounds, different states or countries. But that is only on a bodily level. In reality, at the level of the spirit soul, we are all united in coming together to glorify the Lord. And if we follow that, that makes the whole aspect much simpler. So this is the key aspect of devotional service, that service in devotion means that we come together to chant. And Krishna sees that. Krishna does not see the externals. He sees the internal. What is our motive? In every aspect, he always sees what is the internal motive that we have. And that is best illustrated in a very nice story from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, when he used to come to, among his most intimate pastimes were his nightly kirtans, all night long, in Shiva Sangan, the house of Shiva's Thakur. And only the intimate associates were allowed to come. So once there was a brahmachari who was very, very keen to come, and he was pleading with Shiva's Thakur that he would like to come. And almost daily he persisted. But Shiva's Thakur knew the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he resisted. But then, because he was a very sincere brahmachari, also he was very austere. He was not even taking any rice, and he was only drinking milk. And seeing his humble nature and his pleading and persistent pleading, you know, he was constantly telling Shiva's Prabhu that this is the only thing once in my life, if I get a chance to see, then my life would be perfect. So then, because he was very compassionate, so Shiva's Thakur allowed him to come and told him that you'll have to hide because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should not know that you're here. And so he hid him, and then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, and then he locked all the doors, windows, and then he started as only he can. And then, all the symptoms of ecstasy, and he was really getting into the mood of being completely away from this world. And then suddenly he stopped, and he said that somehow I'm not feeling the ecstasy, and is there someone here who should not be here? So the devotees were very scared. Then, because he asked, so they can't lie to him. So then Shiva's Thakur said that there is nobody who is blasphemous, nobody who is an atheist. But there is a brahmachari who is a very, very nice devotee. He's very sincere and he's very austere. And you know, he was very keen, so he's hiding here. But you know, he only drinks milk and he doesn't have any rice. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very angry, extremely angry. He was livid. And he said, you know, get him out of here immediately. And he says, it is not by drinking milk that, you know, he can see my dancing. So get that milk drinker out. And so the way he shouted so loudly, you know, devotees were scared, but even the brahmachari, he immediately understood the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I think. There was no room for misunderstanding there. So he immediately got up and he left. But because when he was leaving, he was feeling that I definitely, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord has chastised me, but he was feeling extremely grateful in his chastisement. And he was feeling that I was, I got the chance to see the Lord, but the Lord knows my faults and he has, in his wisdom, corrected me. So that was his mood of not feeling like we would feel that, what is this? It's such a small thing and why am I being treated like this? I'm humiliated in front of all. That's the way we would normally feel. But he didn't speak anything, but that was what he was thinking when he was going, that because he was actually grateful for getting this opportunity and also for being corrected. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, being the Lord in the heart, he understood. So then he called him back and he put his foot on his head and he gave him love of God, he gave him devotion in his heart, and then he became an associate of the Lord. But the purport here is, so that you don't misunderstand, it's not that you should not drink milk. You can, definitely, that is all right. But it is not only by taking an austerities that we can please the Lord. It is by pleasing the Lord. Now, pleasing the Lord is by devotion. And what is devotion? Devotion means pleasing the Lord. That means, and what was pleasing to him here, what pleased Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was his humble nature of being grateful in spite of the chastisement, in spite of being corrected, in spite of told to get out of the room. So then he called him and he did tell him that it is not by drinking milk or by austerities that you are going to progress. Yes, devotion means that we become simple in life, and in that mood, definitely the need to be austere or to reduce our needs is an aspect, but that is secondary. The guiding factor has to be the mood of pleasing, whatever is necessary to please the Lord. So, and we also see that in various examples of all the great personalities, various examples, I mean, the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the scriptures are full of only that you take any case, whether it's Maharaj Amrish on one hand, who was the king of the world that time, his mood, Yudhishthir Maharaj, or you take some of the Mahajans, if you take the two extreme cases, extreme in the sense of external services, you had the four Kumars on one side, who were the Mahajans, and they were little, they had the bodies of little children, and they were so, because they were already self-realized, but they, to please the Lord, they did not want to take on any kind of attachment. So they didn't even wear clothes. And because they were children, the bodies of children, because they felt that that is also a source of entanglement. In spite of Lord Brahma wanting them to get married, they didn't get married because they knew that they could please the Lord in that way. And on the other hand, we have Swayambhuva Manu, who is the Manu of the universe. He is the king of the emperor of the entire universe, who had all the wealth of the universe. And he's also a Mahajan, because they had their particular duties, whatever their services they were. At the same time, when he married his daughter Devahuti to Kardama Muni, one of the greatest saint at that time. So, no matter what his situation, they were always doing what was necessary to please the Lord. Then Devahuti and Karda Muni, in turn, because they had Lord Kapila as the Lord himself who came, but they also had several daughters, and one of them, Kala, they married her to Marichi Rishi, who was another great saint. So the entire mood was always to see what is best for spiritual progress, and in that mood they tried to please. So the point here is, in the Brahmachari story or as well as in the Mahajan's examples, that when we are talking of pleasing someone else, we can't take the credit. Things may happen, you know, we may have something, some very wonderful events happening in our life, but whatever happens, it is not our credit. Everything is by the mercy of the Lord and His special representatives. So it is Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Sometimes we may say that my life has changed after I came to the temple, or my life has changed because I met so-and-so. All these events that may happen, some which a non-believer or someone who does not have strong faith in Krishna would normally put it in either as luck, or he would say it is happening because I worked hard, it is me, I am the one who has actually made it happen. And then the analysis also, when it is done, when somebody, you analyze a very successful person, the analysis, when you read articles and everything, it's always done after someone has achieved something. And there is no mention of any outside influence or any, like, God. It is always on what is perceived by the senses. So usually you always read that, yes, he put in so much effort, he did this, he did that, he studied here, and then he got this idea. And he had this creation, he discovered this molecule, or he made this investment. It was a genius. But who gave the intelligence? Who gave that time? Who created the circumstances? So that is where we have to understand that no matter what happens, we don't take the credit. And the events may be good or may be bad. Either way, whatever happens, it is, we are just like the postman. That was an example which Prabhupada always constantly gave of the postman. He said, he himself said that I'm just like a postman, that I'm only delivering the message that my Guru Maharaj gave me. That is all my worth. I cannot take any credit. And my Guru Maharaj took it from in the parampara lining up to Krishna. So just like the postman, if he carries a check of say 1 crore and gives it to somebody, he can't say that I'm very wealthy or I'm the greatest. We can say he's fortunate to do that service. So when something happens, we can say that yes, if we have some special talent or some special gift, something by which we may have what people may say, this person is a genius or he's so brilliant, very intelligent or very talented. We can say that the gift is the greatest. But he is very fortunate to have that gift. We cannot say he is the greatest. He doesn't know where the gift came from. He doesn't know where he came from. Nobody knows. So we cannot analyze that. So therefore, that should be our mood. So primarily, Krishna has no other concern but the gentle humility of our devotion. And ultimately, in the final analysis, even the devotee has only concern for Krishna's sweetness, his charm. Through scripture after scripture, stories that we hear constantly, we see that all the great bhaktas, you know, Haridas Thakur, the gopis, it is not any formidable external a powerful personality of the Lord, or that dimension that appeals to them. What really is always appealing to them is Krishna in Vrindavan, as we know is the highest form, is playing his flute in his threefold bending form. So it is basically the sweetness and the charm which his pure devotees actually experience and which they tell us. So if we had to understand that, we also first need to understand that the sweetness and the charm may come only if we have that kind of a relationship also with others around us. with our relatives, with our family members, with our devotees, etc. Otherwise, if you don't have, it's like you don't have a rehearsal, then how will you do the final test? So this is opportunities that we have, which make us develop a softer heart, which make us look to the greatness of others, and give us an opportunity to appreciate others, and also see our faults, and we are ashamed by our faults, and then we try to rectify our faults. So this is actually an opportunity that comes to us. And then all examples that come in front of us are actually meant for teaching us this, that we hear and we chant, but that progress, the sincere hearing and chanting, will lead us to understand that how we can actually put Krishna in the center of our lives. So Srila Prabhupada is one which is an obvious case, but if we analyze how extraordinary his example is, because he was such a small-made man, physically also very small-made. He was bodily very sick. Most of the time he was always having, because of his advanced age and the schedule he was maintaining and the karmas he was taking of all the devotees, he was, in spite of that, he launched a movement which Vaishnavism has never seen. Never heard, never seen in history of Vaishnavism. And he really shook the world. Just a small made man. And people who were completely addicted to the worst kind of things which we cannot even contemplate could give up all those habits. They were totally conquered by his prowess of his devotion and his love for them. And they actually graduated to giving that up. They started leading a life which was completely foreign to them. It is something which they couldn't even have conceived that there's such a life. Many had not even heard of many of the words that they were hearing. So, in fact, when they met Srila Prabhupada, his accent was very difficult to understand because of the Indian accent and the heavy touch of Bengali. So people never understood what he was speaking. But initially it was just the warmth, the love, the care that he was giving to them that won them over. And then gradually when they understood, in fact when they started putting trust in him, then they just developed so much of faith and trust that this person is my well-wisher, that they sensed that whatever he says is the truth. That is the kind of faith they developed. So that when they started actually understanding what he was speaking, any word that came out of his mouth was the truth. And they lived that. And that's how their lives got transformed. That was the power that Srila Prabhupada had. And we see this constantly in all the Leelas. Every scripture, they talk of what Prabhupada represented in the sweetness of his devotion. He was very steadfast in his own life, but at the same time, he was very warm and soft and very loving to everyone. And this is exactly what we see in every kind of story, how people would relate to each other. In Chaitanya Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, in the generation, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, the six Goswamis, for instance, their relations with each other were very, very intimate. Now, they were so powerful, so advanced, so pure, that those who have a fraction of their kind of intelligence and advancement would actually find reason to feel proud today. But here, they were so intimately involved, but because they were only there to see how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's how they could serve him, therefore their relations were on a very very warm and intimate level. In fact, Rupa Goswami, who was considered the leader of the six Goswamis, we are considered Rupanugas, as followers of Rupa Goswami, he used to declare that I am the personification of insignificance at the lotus feet of Sanatan Goswami. Imagine Rupa Goswami saying that, that his own brother, but that is the mood that they actually lived in. And also the generation after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were three very intimate friends, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya and Shyamanand Pandit. And all the three, they were initiated by three different gurus. Narottam Das Thakur was initiated by Loknath Goswami. Srinivas Acharya was initiated by Gopal Bhatt Goswami. And Shyamanand Pandit had taken initiation from Hriday Chaitanya. And all the three gurus had sent these three disciples to Vrindavan to study under Jeev Goswami. And we know how they were so intimate, so close as friends, the dearest of friends. At the same time, they were exemplary in their service and their mood to please their spiritual master. So they could, which this may seem irreconcilable to us in our thinking, but it can only be possible if the center is Krishna. And the amazing thing is that Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya were the best of friends. And then later on, Narottam Das Thakur one of his closest friends was Ramchandra Kaviraj, who we hear that in several of his songs. And Ramchandra Kaviraj was actually the disciple of Srinivas Acharya. So if we were to see in our world today, if we were to go by externalities, unless you actually see each person in as your master and you are the servant, then only you can be oblivious of this kind of relationships. Otherwise, to say that I am a senior, my disciple is my junior, and my best friend's disciple is also relatively my junior. But here, there was no question of that understanding. It was such an intimate personal level that each saw how they could, each saw themselves as how they could serve the other in the mood of serving the Lord. So therefore, they may happen to be coming from here or there or take an initiation from here or there. That was that was secondary. And we see that the leadership of Radha Gopinath Temple also, right from the time over the last 20 years, this has been the attempt by them to propagate this mood, where with all our frailties, we have our own weaknesses, which we will discuss a little bit today. But what is the goal? What is the motive? That has to be very clear. And that is to follow in the same footsteps, how we can develop those relations, how we can see each other, how we can help and respect and trust each other in that way. Such that if we do commit mistakes, we are in a position to be rectified, and we do our best to see that we don't commit those same mistakes again. And that is what is very attractive to everyone who come also here, and they see that the mood. But to have such an atmosphere, there has to be a spirit of detachment. Why? Because our nature is being such that we would tend to be critical. We have a tendency to find faults, to talk loosely. It is a very strong urge that comes, and that is a conditioning that this Kali Yuga brings, right from the outside, and then when it is also prevalent even in the spiritual world, in the spiritual circles here. Not in the spiritual world, but in our small attempt at a spiritual world, that these are the flaws that still remain. And this is what really are the things which really stop us, because even if we come as devotees, we start pursuing our effort to please our superiors and our Guru Maharaj and take to the process. And then we do feel comfortable and we do feel a difference. We feel pleasure. And then we start feeling, we may not admit it, but we do start feeling that we are better than I am better than you. Internally, we may feel that I am making progress. I am a senior, someone is a junior. Someone came 5 years before me, now he's 2 years behind me. And we make sure that people realize that he's 2 years behind me. So we try to kind of make those differences in very subtle ways. And at least in our mind, we start looking at that way. So you have this concept of senior, junior, superior, inferior. So then our actions then start on that basis. And then before we know it, we are offended when somebody tells us something, thinking that he doesn't have a right to tell me, he doesn't understand me. So these are things which are which manifest unless we keep guard, you know, unless we can protect ourselves from and constantly remind each other. And here in the Bhagavatam lectures, in the guidance that we get from our Guru Maharajas and Prabhupada disciples who come here and teach us that. So primarily these anxieties that are created by our own conflicts. We create these conflicts based on these fault-finding tendencies. We forget what, for instance, Raghunath Das Goswami said, that idle gossip is the prostitute which really destroys the chastity of my mind. Now, we don't even consider, forget a worse issue like criticism. But even idle gossip, sometimes we may talk prajalpa, which may have no value, and before we know it, it goes into an international network of gossip and rumors, thinking that we are still in the spiritual circles. But really, what this does is it destroys our mood, and it is actually destroying our mood. And whatever effort we are doing, this is actually pulling us back. So this we need to guard against very, very strongly. Raghunath Bhat Goswami, another Goswami, he would never tolerate, never listen to any kind of faults, even if they were true. He would say that I don't want to, he's chanting Hare Krishna, I don't want to hear anything about it. That's it. So unless we are, you know, in a, like a doctor who has to do service, unless we are in a position that we actually have to correct someone or tell somebody something, we should refrain. And even there also, unless we have some experience in practicing that, you know, if we are a kind of a practitioner who has a way to do it, we should refrain from it and take guidance. Because this could really go to the, it could cut our budding desire for spiritual progress. And it's not just a sermon for all of you. I mean, it is as much applicable to all of us, myself included, which may happen, because these are the subtle things. Now, Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, is for the intelligent. Only the intelligent come here. Why? Because this process is very subtle. Everything else, no matter how you manipulate material nature to create wealth and so on, that is still on a gross level. The most difficult aspects are on a subtler level. And the intelligent are those who do follow this, who understand that. But once having come here, sometimes our intelligence also, you know, takes us to, lets us think about our own false ego and inflate it. And therefore we need this kind of, what I would say, check and balance. The society is created for having a check and balance, so that if we step out of line, we have a system whereby we can be brought in. So it's not easy to cooperate. But then we have our own examples even right now, not just in Prabhupada's time, which we would say that we have not followed. I mean, we were not there. No, almost nobody in this room was active at that time. But now we can see, even in the next generation of ISKCON, you have the GBC, which is the ruling body of in ISKCON, and there is it's a fashion to kind of criticize GBC, maybe not so much here because we are all much neophytes. But those who are kind of those who have knowledge of ISKCON, as they consider, or those who are intimately aware of what goes on, then their mood becomes like, it becomes a familiarity breeding contempt, you know, because you become too close and you look at the faults. So we tend to criticize this managerial issue or that issue. But we actually see the other side, that by and large, it is a fact that those who are representing ISKCON society today, who are the GBCs, the 30, 40 people there, plus the sannyasis and the gurus, the 150, 200 who are people who are very, you can say, in leadership positions of ISKCON, they are people who have spent 20, 30, 35 years, not only just spent the years, but they have been very faithful to Prabhupada by and large. They are very, very strong. They have such a strong understanding of Krishna consciousness and a strong loyalty to Prabhupada. And you can imagine, with such strong personalities, when you sit in a room to take decisions and then you have to cooperate, each one has a strong individual streak. Each one has their own views. How do they manage? So they are managing it, and ultimately, so it is only possible when there is cooperation. But then cooperation means what? Cooperation means that we give in to our from our ideas. We have to give in sometimes when we compromise and we decide for the larger good. I remember one of the senior members of the GBC, and Prabhupada disciple, when he used to say, he had said here when he came to our temple, when he was talking about how they came to decision, he said, sometimes you may be convinced that what you are thinking is right, but for the sake of the larger harmony and cooperation, you may actually accept a lesser idea, but it is better if it is going to lead to congeniality and harmony, rather than just sticking to just the technical issue about knowing that your point is right. So you are right, but you are wrong. You are right in the sense, you may be in the narrow sense right about a particular issue, but the larger issue is that somehow we have to work together. And this is what they are demonstrating. So there may be weaknesses and frailties, but that is an example that every temple and all of us also need to know, that we can only cooperate if we are able to give in, help each other, whatever the services are, especially those hundreds of devotees or several hundreds of devotees of the Radha Gopinath temple who are connected to so many projects, including in the temple itself. Hundreds of devotees are actually working in the temple, and what to speak of Govindas, and you have the midday meal, the hospital, the school, the Vada project, preaching centers, base, so many. And we interact with one another, and sometimes fleetingly, sometimes in a consistent way for a long time. And if this mood is not there, that we need to understand that the implementation of what we have heard is the most important thing. Execution of the mental understanding, application of that is what really is the way we can please. Because ultimately, action comes from thoughts. First come the thoughts, then comes the action. And those actions actually become habit. So if we don't watch our first the thoughts, but then when we start acting, we have to analyze also our actions. And then when we, in those actions, if our effort is actually to please the other person, if the desire is very strong, then all our focus would be to see that, is there anything that is even the slightest bit displeasing in some way, and then you would be very sensitive to know that. Today what happens is that we are very sensitive to what anyone tells us, and we are least sensitive to what happens to the other person. But it should be the other way around. So and actually, if you see that there are almost everybody would have somebody or the other. If you spend some time in the Krishna consciousness movement, there is no doubt that you would have somebody or some people, usually our Guru Maharaj, or it may be some others, but who we deeply respect, and we are very, very keen to please. Very keen. In fact, that becomes our basis. But why only that person? And what would that please that person? What would please our Guru Maharajas? They are doing everything to serve Prabhupada. So if you actually see that that devotion to, by purifying our hearts by chanting, we have a personal sadhana, which is very critical, which is the basis, the foundation. But then the actions that come out of that, when we interact with people, when we are trying to do that, to do on various services, if the mood is not to cooperate, to always be seeing that, to be extra sensitive to other feelings, rather than being extra sensitive to our own feelings, and act in that way, in a transparent way. And then if you do make mistakes, and if you are in a position to allow others to correct us, that is the basis on which it would develop very close and intimate relationships. And there are so many examples to illustrate that. When, again in Chaitanya Leela, Gopala Chappal was afflicted by leprosy because he was criticizing Shivas Thakur Prabhu. Shivas Thakur, and because of that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the power of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had such power that instantly inflicted leprosy on Gopala Chappal. And then he was, Gopala Chappal was extremely pained. I mean, physically, he was in great agony also, and he was begging for forgiveness. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when hearing his begging for forgiveness, he was actually very angry. He said, "You have offended my devotee, so you, for millions of years, you will suffer like this." But then, later, when Gopala Chappal actually felt sorry for what he did, and when he actually appreciated Shivas Thakur, and he begged forgiveness from Shivas Thakur, and actually he was understanding the glorious position of Shivas Thakur. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he understood that, then he immediately forgave. So we could see that his mood is to see what we internally develop. And if we have faith that Krishna is, on one hand, we are here to understand Krishna, and we are developing our faith in Krishna, then we must also have faith that Krishna is in us, and that every action, every thought, even at the start of the thought, he knows what that thought is, what to speak of the action. So then he knows what we are doing, what we are thinking. So no matter how well we camouflage anything, no matter how well we cover our tracks, but he knows everything that we do. He knows the motive also behind it. So it is not the external. You know, we may try to please someone or do something, and then we want others to see. But he actually understands. So we should know this. This has to be very deeply entrenched in us, that he understands our thinking, our thoughts, and our actions, even though nobody else is there. He's watching. And if we are governed by that, then we also develop a personal, intimate understanding that we can be close to him. But at the same time, it also acts as a deterrent, at least to start with, to understand that you know, he's watching us. On criticism, Sachinandan Maharaj, His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj, he gave a very nice talk. And in that, he said that Krishna leaves the heart of a devotee who criticizes. Krishna leaves the heart of a devotee who actually indulges in criticism. And criticism comes from what? Basically, you know, if you start, it may start by idle gossip, by fault finding. You know, in Kali Yuga, we feel very great pleasure in somehow in finding faults. Unfortunately, that is true, but somehow it is a soothing balm. Somehow, when you see someone else's weakness, and actually we may actually feel happy secretly that someone is not doing well, and we would not want to do anything to help the person. So this tendency is very much there. And then to comment on somebody's fault becomes very, very strong nature to us. Once one devotee was criticizing another devotee in front of Prabhupada. You know, he was trying to say that, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that. So Prabhupada interrupted him and said, "I'm overlooking your faults, why don't you overlook his faults?" So immediately that argument shut down. So it is immediately, what he was pointing out is that we all have faults. And he very bluntly said that, "I'm overlooking, otherwise why would I be, I'm pulling you out of this misery, I'm creating your karmas and bringing you to the lotus feet. He didn't say that, but this is what he actually was doing. So then, in the same mode, if he can do that, why can't we? So that we have to do. But it is a fact, if we understand that this, if we know that there is a weakness and the tendency to find faults is there to criticize, then because ultimately gossip, rumors, and fault finding, they're all negative. Have you ever heard of gossip, which is something which is positive? It's always negative. It is something which is generally kind of something. It is has a confidential aura, something where you keep you want to spread it in a survey, because it is actually bringing someone down. So if you understand that this and continuous talking loosely about someone, etc., then that forms a tendency to criticize, and then you become bolder and we may speak out and think that we are actually doing right. So if we are in a position to correct, or if we have given the authority, yes. But most of the times we may just indulge in criticism because we don't like something. And usually that, and Sachidananda Maharaj makes the point that, he said that in my observations in Krishna consciousness over the last 30 odd years, he said that I have seen that those who indulge in too much of fault finding and criticism generally end up having those same faults. And if you go to see, it is a fact. I mean, I think the statement is very, very true. That sometimes we may constantly say that, but then we really analyze that we may be having those seeds, or it may be actually more prominent than that. Another observation he had that there have been cases where devotees have we talk of Vaishnava aparad, not to speak ill of Vaishnavas, and then on the other hand we have seen that devotees may have misuse that, because devotees are soft and don't criticize. So under the guise of this injunction, they may have done injustices. So Sachidananda Maharaj says, yes, that may be the case. That is true. But that also is not a reason for us to criticize or to say that move this Vaishnava aparad issue only out of the way, because that is not serving the purpose. And therefore, I get the liberty to criticize because he is doing. Even then, he says, basically it is Krishna who will take care. And he said, in my observation also, ultimately Krishna takes care. Whether we can see it in our lifetime or whether he does it, this faith we must have that Krishna will bring those issues out, and the laws of karma will take over. So that is something which we need to have faith in. And the third very important observation he had on criticism, when somebody asked him that, is there any way we know that whether we are actually indulging in fault finding and criticism, or we are doing it with the right motive? Because ultimately, no matter what, we are always questioning: do I need to do this? I mean, is it something that subconsciously or secretly I'm finding pleasure, but I'm giving the kind of camouflage of service? So he said, over time, if you find that your enthusiasm is waning, if you find that your enthusiasm is going down and your material desires are growing, perhaps you definitely need to check that whether you are unnecessarily fault finding. It's quite likely that you may actually find the answer there. So, basically this movement is an internal movement. Why it is an intelligent, why Prabhupada said is for the intelligent? It is somebody may be earning 8,000 a month, or somebody, that is not the issue. Somebody may be having 7 degrees or not. It is someone who understands that Krishna is the controller and we are actually his servant eternally. To at least mentally also accept it is not easy. So therefore, when somebody comes with that intelligence, and then to accept these faults and try to correct it is very important. When one Brahmin came crying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and saying that he was crying because he had criticized others and he was very sorry. So that time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that criticism is like deadly poison, and the nectar is actually in glorifying others. So he said, now you can neutralize the poison by glorifying him. And in a sense, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj implemented it in a way, you know, Prabhupada's guru. Whenever two devotees had conflicts, he would make them sit each other facing each other and then make each other praise each other, say the good things about each other. So it is, in a sense, countering the ill feeling that we may have internally. Because no matter what, when we see the other side, there will always be things to positive things. There is no question about it. The very fact that someone has been able to take to this path, no matter what the material odds are, no matter what the world is doing, that itself is amazing. Then comes the second aspect, that because of our different backgrounds and our natures and conditioning, we do have we bring also our, you know, on the table, we bring other things, unwanted things, and then those slowly would take time to move out. But till that time, they may manifest in various ways. But then we don't base our lives and our action based on that. So Prabhupada also said that, you know, we must indulge in Krishna Katha, because then only we'll develop the taste of hearing and chanting. And he said something which is quite chilling. He said that if we don't regularly indulge in Krishna Katha, or in developing the taste to chant and hear, a day will come that whatever services we may be doing, we will think it is a burden which has been left behind by my spiritual master. So this, you know, we have to guard against that we may be doing some service or the other over years, and then we may find reasons, some justification, that so-and-so is causing my dislike for the service, or something else has happened, some circumstances. But ultimately, it could very well be that actually we are the cause by our own action by which the taste is going, and we will actually be internally feeling that this is a burden which is left behind by my spiritual master. And another, we talked of fault finding, criticism. One of the most deadly dangers that we have is of envy. Because in fact, that is the, in a sense, the father of all our weaknesses. Because why are we criticizing? Why are we finding faults? Why are we, distracting ourselves by talking about? Because ultimately, it stems from envy, whereby we are wanting to pull the other person down. And this envious nature, like, for instance, Duryodhan was the personification of envy, because he was envious of anyone who did better than him. For instance, Bhima was stronger, or Yudhishthir was more popular, so he couldn't stand it. So we will find that somebody who surpasses us in the material world or in our devotional circles, someone does better than us, someone gets more respect, someone gets more recognition, someone does your service better than you are doing, and you don't we don't like it, you know. And then our actions are based on this, and it really hurts us. So we may not use the word envy. We will not say that, but actually the root is that we are upset by somebody doing that. Either he is getting recognition, we think it is belonging to us, to me, I have done this or I started it, and now he's getting the... It may be even technically true, in the sense that somebody else may have been getting the credit, and you think you should get it. And you indignantly want to demonstrate to the world that, by the way, you know, I put your hand up, it's me, you know, you have to look at me, you're looking at the wrong person, I'm the one who did it. So that it becomes very strong. Sometimes we are blamed also for doing the wrong things. I mean, we have not done it, but somebody blames us. But then we should know that in the past life, we must have taken credit for what we didn't need to take also. Or even in this life also. Definitely, it is something which stems from that. Just like sometimes some person in our life is actually causing real problems, we should know that it could be in a family member, it could be a friend, it could be a neighbor, and it could be our colleague in the office somewhere. He just is a major, it's just Krishna's arrangement. It is a Krishna's arrangement. But then we must know that you must have done something to him. So now let him purify you. So let your account be squared up. But we may not know the details, but clearly that Krishna, if we have faith that Krishna has done something, then we understand where it is coming from. That there is a reason and he knows best, but then you just have to accept and tolerate it. So this cooperation cannot come if this envious nature is there. So therefore, we have to be very, very vigilant and try to see that we should avoid it. Because ultimately, whom are we envious of? You know, we may get away because we think that we don't use the word envy, and we may actually have some reasons to say that I've got 5 degrees, he's got 2 degrees, I've done this much, he's done only this much, I've spent 14 years, he's spent 11 years, and he's getting... We may have any kind of reasons. But actually, what we are envious of is Krishna. Radhanath Maharaj was explaining this so very well. He said, actually, we are envious of Krishna. Why? Because all the attributes are coming from Krishna. So somebody is very intelligent. Somebody is very quick. You know, somebody is very good-looking, does deity worship very well. Some service or the other which... And you feel that he should not be... But actually, the attribute, anything that we have is coming from Krishna. So that means we are challenging that Krishna's right to give the attribute. So in other words, we are saying, so who are we to tell Krishna that give this attribute to this person and give that to this person? Why did you give it to him? In a sense, we are saying that. So ultimately, to accept and in fact, to develop love and trust is really understanding that Krishna is our father, and we are only meant to be servants. The real meaning of the word servant is that we have to accept it. So ultimately, to create such an atmosphere of love, trust, and cooperation, we have to develop a higher relationship with the Lord and His devotees. So it is not a sentimental thing. It is not that because it will become sentimental if we do not have the basis very sound. It is the relationship is centered around Krishna's presence in our life. And that is why, more so when we have intimate relations or people with whom we have intimate relations, we have to guard against. Because with whom we spend more time, with whom we share our... whether we like it or not, we may be sharing our weaknesses also with those people who are close. Because generally, in a temple hall of 1,000 people together, we are in our best behavior. There is no room for somebody seeing us in the wrong way. But it is only when we are in the privacy of our house or in a small group, then we may be our natural self. And our natural self may be full of unnatural things. So, therefore, this is, we may think that, okay, we are talking of envy, we are talking of cooperation, we must, so when I come to the temple and I talk to such and such devotee, I sit in the same room with him, I should cooperate. Of course, that is a fact. But this also starts from talking of cooperation with your son, with your father, with your wife, whoever. Now, they have their own levels in the sense that if they are devotees, clearly it is even more important, critical, because offending a devotee would be worse. But sometimes you may say that somebody is not a devotee. Then even in that case, our cooperation is by not creating any extra offenses, not creating extra disturbances. And if the external circumstance is such that because we are following a path of Krishna consciousness, it is ruffling feathers. We don't aggravate it. We don't pound and humiliate somebody. But we stick to it. And that is in fact the ultimate compassion that you can give by following to that path. But usually it is with those, say, especially in the Grihastha Ashram, we are following Grihastha Ashram. The difference between Grihamedi and Grihastha Ashram, we are told, is primarily this, that is Krishna the center or ourselves? If we become self-centered, selfishness comes in. Even as devotees, we could very well be that. You know, we could have, we may be chanting 16 rounds. We come to the temple. We may be doing this service. We may do everything. All the externals are there. But if ultimately, in say, in our relation with our husband or wife or with our family, if we are still in that mood that I am the boss and what I say must happen, so then we are actually putting us in the center, not Krishna. So it doesn't mean that decisions, there are mundane day-to-day decisions that may be needing to take, and depending on the attributes and where it falls, you know, they would decide who would take those decisions. But it can be, it is always done in a mode of cooperation. But generally what happens is that we then try to divide between the private life and our spiritual life. Even when we come to the temple, we try to have a division between the two, that there is a compartment. And this is something which has to actually disappear. And otherwise, we may actually have two faces of our activity, personality, two ways of living. And we may be living one way and then we may be living other, flip-flopping between one and the other. Yes, to some extent, it's not that we expose all our weaknesses when we come here. But we should be aware of it. And we need to be not only aware, but we have to be sensitive to trying to improve that, and gradually, because it, no matter what we do, it will always find a way to affect our relation with others. And when we displease devotees, we are displeasing Lord, and because of that, actually our spiritual progress would be affected. So some questions were asked when this was being discussed once, that when you talk of cooperation, associating with devotees, they said, we don't like to associate. I mean, we don't like some people. But then, yeah, it is a fact that we may not be instantly attracted to everyone. You know, we may have a relationship on up to a certain level. I mean, the intimacy can be only with a small group. It is just where the personal chemistries may click. But respect and appreciation can be for everyone. There is no exception. There is nobody who is not deserving of that. If we feel that, then that is a major weakness of enough. That means we are actually taking the position of God and trying to judge. So, so it doesn't matter if even if we do not have somehow the closeness. Our styles may be different. Our backgrounds or our natures are such that this happens. And but that is still there is room for respect. And genuine appreciation that you know, he's also an aspiring devotee, he's also making every effort. Somehow we are not able to work together. I mean, maybe the fault is in me, whatever the problems are, but for the sake of the service, maybe working elsewhere. But that does not mean that we could, you know, criticize somebody, backbite, pull down someone. Indirectly, we may be wanting others to know his weakness. So, you know, we also then tend to find ways of doing it in a very sophisticated way. So this would be going against the harmony. You know, this the mood would be extremely detrimental. Radhanath Maharaj, when he was giving a lecture, he said that unless you develop this respect and trust and love, your kirtans also will be very hollow and superficial. It's a very deep statement that we may. So, because we say that kirtan is the ultimate, but if you are doing, if you are indulging in kirtan, is not just the activity. Of course, it has benefit. There's no doubt. But if we do not, if the motive is not to doing it in a mood of respect and love for each other, then actually we may, you know, even that could be very superficial. And he said that sometimes our intellectual, we get so intellectually surcharged that we transcend being caring or nice. You know, we get so intellectually surcharged that, you know, we are in the ephemeral world of the philosophy and therefore we don't put it into the, don't see the link on just the mundane issues about, I mean, how we can act kindly and nicely. And we don't need to go any further than Prabhupada's example. I mean, how caring he was. We discussed how that was the basis on which all the people came to him. And he continued, and he was for months, he was just feeding them. He was, they didn't even know who he was. They just saw that he was an old Eastern saint who had come there. And he was conducting some Bhagavad Gita classes and offering some wonderful food, prasad. So they didn't even know what this was. So these hippies used to come there, take advantage of him, exploit him that way. Because they liked the food, they just came there, they didn't have any etiquette, they just ate and left. So here was the greatest spiritual personality of the universe cooking for them. Then he was serving them. He was cleaning up after they went and doing it week after week after week for months together. And then it started dawning on them. So this kind of unconditional love which he demonstrated, it has to find an appeal in the others. You know, when you do something, act of kindness, or then it is bound to do it. And we find that elsewhere. Sometimes you're walking on the road and somebody just bumps into you. Now, you may be in your own world and somebody bumps and you get very upset instinctly. But the other person, if he takes very humble, is, "I'm sorry." Immediately your anger also will dissipate. It happens with, even if you don't know the person. But if the other person takes a very hostile position or some, kya karte hai, dekhta nahi hai, then you also, show your Virat Roop. To yourself you think it is so. So this is an unchecked anger that comes spontaneously. So there is a very nice story, true story actually, which about one poor boy. He was selling some things to just make two ends meet. And one day he could not sell anything. So he was very hungry. He didn't even have enough to eat. So he decided that he'll knock on the nearby door and ask for some food. So he knocked on the door and one young lady opened the door. So because he saw the young lady, he was scared to ask what he was going to ask. So he just asked for a glass of water. And but she could somehow sense that he was very hungry. So she got a very tall glass of milk and gave it to him. So after he drank it, then he asked that, "How much do I owe you?" So she said that, "No, my mother said that, that you should not take any payment for kindness." So this poor boy, then he said that, "Okay, I shall thank you from my heart, with my heart." And then he went away. But that was such an effect on him that he was completely down, and we can actually visualize it. Several people go through this kind of thing when they're totally down, they're out. And when just an act like this comes, and then somebody who actually notices and helps on such a small level. So this person, this boy, really got heart. He had faith in God that there is somebody acted nicely. And then more than 20 years later, the same lady, she was afflicted with a serious disease, some illness. And this was a small town. So the doctors did not know what was wrong. So then they sent her to, referred her to a big hospital in the big town. And this Dr. Howard Kelly, that is this boy who ultimately became a doctor, he happened to be working in this hospital. So when she was referred there, and then when the place from which she came, the small town, attracted his attention because he came from that place. So immediately he was curious. So he went down the corridor into the room in his hospital gown, and he found that, he immediately recognized her. And he was, from that day, made an extra special determination to put in extra hours to try to solve this case. And ultimately, the struggle was successful, and after many weeks and months, she was cured. And then finally, then he told the accounts department that before the bill is sent to her, you send it to me. I'd like to just see it. So the bill was sent to him, and he wrote something at the corner, and then the bill was sent to this lady. So this elderly lady now, she was actually dreading to actually open that envelope, because she knew that my whole life savings are going to go into this. I don't know how I'm going to pay it. So she actually kept it aside for some time, for several hours, but then ultimately she had to be discharged, so she had to acknowledge. So then when she opened that, and then she was going through the bill, and then at the end corner she saw small note in capital letters signed by Dr. Howard Kelly, said, paid in full with a glass of milk. So just one act of kindness, and this person never forgot, and he reciprocated, and it changed his life. So we can see, and these there may be many small instances which we remember. So what to speak of the unbounding gratitude we may have for somebody who has brought us to the temple, to the association of devotees, to a new life. What can we even visualize that? What can we, what to speak of what we can consider giving to Srila Prabhupada, who without his mercy nothing would have been there, and everybody's lives are going through a change. We keep forgetting that, but we should remember what we would have been, what we were, and what we have given a chance for. So then the question is, how can we reciprocate? Reciprocation is in many ways. So the most difficult are to internalize and try to implement it the way we have been discussing. That while we are taking the sadhana bhakti route of chanting, hearing, sincerely trying to follow, but minimizing as much as possible and knowing that this is one way of reciprocating, that Krishna and his special disciples will all be pleased with us if we are able to control our difficulties, and because through that we are actually causing difficulties to others. We are actually impeding someone else's spiritual progress. We may not notice it, but it is a fact that we may actually, and that would be, we don't know how much that would be detrimental in our progress. So sometimes you may wonder why I'm not, why I'm struggling so much and I'm still not getting the taste. But it may be that we are not watching out for how we behave. And we can see that Prabhupada was, you know, indiscriminate in his love that he was giving. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of stories. Devotees, they just talk about that, how 30 years later after Prabhupada has left this planet, how their lives are transformed. Just they remember one incident. This Bhagavat Prabhu, one Prabhupada disciple was saying that, small thing, you know, when Guru Puja was going on and the whole world is glorifying Srila Prabhupada, and he calls him and he had some cut on his foot and he's asking him, how's your foot? He was very concerned. And then he actually took out some, while the Guru Puja is going on, everybody is chanting and Prabhupada is taking out some rupees and giving, saying, go and get, he wrote the ointment also and saying, go and get it. So his concern was how he can help. And this Bhagavat Prabhu says today also that that was such a deep impact on him. That here, what was the motive of Prabhupada? It's just that Prabhupada was so grateful that this person has come to the Krishna consciousness and helping him to follow his spiritual master's instructions, that he's showing this act of kindness. So like that, there have been innumerable cases. So we have to somehow remember that in such a way that this can also help us to to watch out, watch our flanks. You know, while we are going full tilt, you know, we are saying, yes, we must come daily, we come to the temple, we come on Sundays, we associate devotees. But then these are the things which actually are the tendency to criticize, fault finding, and then not countering with actually finding the words to appreciate others, because that is the counter to criticism. The Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was asking devotees to praise each other, to see the, because when you actually speak out, then you actually, the same tongue which is used to criticize will actually find, it's an antidote. So unless we watch out on the flanks from these kind of weeds, we will find that these obstacles will still remain. So we will end here. And any questions? Maybe a couple of questions before we have kirtan.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you very much for your wonderful class, very applicable to me. Prabhu, many times we hear such wonderful lectures and instructions, but when we try to execute, we keep intellectually exercising and thinking that this is how we should behave. But the desire for false prestige, the desire for being recognized is so strong, that even though we think very hard, we try and apply, it surfaces out, either in action or in words. Like Arjuna asks Krishna, why one is impelled to sin. So in that sense, get impelled to act in a way which, by which we can get recognized. How to curtail that?
Well, the process is clear, and we sincerely follow the process. And we should also have patience that, we don't know how long it would take. But then when it manifests, and oftentimes it would be in presence of others. Oftentimes somebody or the other would notice it and correct us. So then it is, how do we accept that? If you are really anxious to curtail it, then it could be just our wife pointing out that you talk big things, that and then Maharaj is saying that I am not your property. I am also Krishna's property. So you should behave that way. Now, how would we take it? Do we say that you don't know anything? I'm just giving an example. It could be that, or it could be... So there are many, many ways that when it manifests, it's not going to manifest totally in isolation. It's not just going to be in thought. Because if it's a lot of it is in thought, it will come out in action. Now, when it does, it is going to affect someone. When it does affect, the question is, how will we react to someone either correcting us, or we may realize it later. Oftentimes, we may realize it even if someone doesn't correct. Are we willing to rectify it? Are we going to make amends? Otherwise, it will remain empty words. So we will have ample chances to try to recognize it and then rectify it. So that, and then how we react to it will determine how much the frequency will come in future, because to the extent that we try to rectify genuinely, Krishna will help us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Guruji. Thank you very much. Guruji, I have one question that whatever you spoke, if you take it and if you leave some time, with devotees, these things gradually decreasing. But how to take it seriously, constantly, and every day?
If we are sincerely chanting, and sincerely means we understand that the meaning of the Mahamantra, when we recite the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So it actually means that we are appealing to the Supreme Personality and to His energy, Ladini Shakti, that please engage me in your service. So if we are actually conscious of that, if we try to improve our chanting, because the biggest difficulty is that our mind keeps fluctuating and thinking of all the various things. So how much effort we are putting in the... So the process is given to us. It's a question of how much effort we put into that. So whether it is starting with our chanting, then we are regularly told we should associate. So associating is not just a physical entry, not just coming here and it's not like showing your face or just having darshan. It is actually... we are getting various images in... subconsciously also. Most of it is positive, because when we go back, why do we come here? Because we really feel nice, we feel happy, the prasad is good, the kirtan is wonderful, and the lecture is nice. Most of the time we go back. So it is a positive feeling. Nobody has forced us to come. So if we realize why we are coming here, what we are hearing, we may come for Bhagavatam, we may either read the Bhagavatam or we may talk to people. So that is actually a real association. So actually association means to surrender to the process. So to the extent we physically come here, or otherwise to the extent that we follow the instructions, we do know people who are very serious in Krishna consciousness. To what extent are we observing them? We want to be close to them, in the sense that whenever we get a chance, if they're giving a lecture or if we get to talk to them, we observe them, we admire them, we try to imbibe their qualities. So these are activities which are available to everyone. To the extent that we do that, automatically they will diminish. The other part will start diminishing. Our taste will fall down because we are developing this taste. So we have to just increase and concentrate on that. And side by side, when we see that we sometimes act in the opposite way, and we have, which is bound to happen, we acknowledge it and we try to rectify it. So basically, it is just that we continue the process. I mean, and and sometimes if we are confused, then we should ask. We should ask somebody. We should ask our counselor or somebody whom we have faith in, you know, who understands us. So if we reveal our mind, it may mean that we are revealing a weakness or difficulty. And if we have that, so that's a test. Are we willing to do that if we really want an answer, if we are confused? If we know the answer, then we should follow it. If we don't know, then we should ask. Last question. Yes.
Prabhuji, we should develop detachment. But some people, when they get, in the past it is seen that some people, when they get offended, they also develop detachment. And these are sometimes stop their services. They think, I want to develop detachment. So how to solve that type of problem?
No, detachment means that we are... what you are talking of is, it's not actually detachment, because really we are attached to a false ego. So ultimately we are talking of detachment means we actually are detaching ourselves from our weaknesses and our our false ego, our the tendency for lust, envy, anger, greed, illusion. So we are talking of detachment from our weaknesses. So somebody who physically stops coming here, he may think he's detaching himself by not coming here, but actually he's attaching himself to Maya, to his all the external Shakti of Krishna. So in fact, we are now talking of how we develop detachment. So for such a person, then we would hope that if reason prevails, then we can somehow find somebody who can likely have an effect on him to be able to resume his Krishna consciousness. It happens that sometimes we are hurt by someone, because in personal relations somebody may speak something, and you know, we should know how the impact of words. Sometimes it can be disastrous and people stop coming because at that time they are in a spiritually weak position. We may be weak and we get so offended that we stop coming, and in fact the cure is to continue coming. So at that time we may not be the right persons, but then if you are concerned about someone, then we may actually find possibly somebody who is much more neutral, somebody who is unaffected and who may be acceptable to that person, and perhaps that person can very indirectly build relations, and then at least we keep ourselves away and somebody else can take over. So those are ways which we can try to see how the person can be again connected to Krishna. Perhaps if he is not interested in coming to this place here, he may be interested to come to some other temple. You know, we have other temples. So we have to find ways to see how, and then if nothing works, then, well, we just pray for him, and then there are several others who, you know, who are actually keen, and we spend our time with them. So we make every effort, but then ultimately, it's for him to react accordingly. You had one last question. You're absolutely right. The question is that if we, instead of reminding ourselves about cooperating with others and, you know, we should not do this to others and other wrong things, if we just develop instantaneous love for Krishna, then all these problems would not be there. He's absolutely right. The only thing is that how do we do that? I don't know. And the way we have been told is that we are all sadhakas. You know, we are following this path because that is for the paramhamsas. And you know, those are very, very, very rare. People who are already on that level. And Prabhupada himself was telling that, you know, there's nobody who's an exception to that. That means all practically everybody in Kali Yuga, they have to go through this process. I mean, there will be some, but they would not be in the vicinity of here. They would be... So we have to, as far as we are concerned, our position is very clear, that we need not... We are categorically told we should not be worried about... in fact, we should not be distracted by the lure of... even if we see and hear some other people who say give other process. If we have the faith in the process, then we have to follow that just strictly. It may take one lifetime, it can take many lifetimes. So that's why it's a matter of discipline. So it is not a matter of what we feel. It's a matter of what we need to do. So the discipline, the sadhana means the discipline of just following the process. And in that following, we have glaring weaknesses inevitably. So nobody is... somebody who thinks he doesn't have that is probably the one who needs it the most. Probably. So we, all of us need it, and we need to be very vigilant. We can't be... none of us would be absolved of that. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.